Well, last time we ended with you getting married. You talked about getting married. I'm wondering what year that was.
It must have been 1944, I think. In November, I know that much.
And what were you doing at the time that you were married? Is that when you were working?
No, I had stopped working at Douglas. Well, see, I got sick. And they told me my tonsils were cryptic or something of it. And anyway, they were constantly swollen. I was forever, you know, having sore throats and things. So I had to have a tonsillectomy. And so after I went in the hospital and I came out from the tonsillectomy, I went back over there. Then I said, oh, I don't want to work there anymore. So I started working at the Registrar of Voters, I believe that's where it was. And that's where. And then Wardell wrote me, said, I'm coming in, we're getting married. I said, oh, boy. And so that's what it did. We came in, we got married, and shortly after that he was transferred to the air base at Walterboro, South Carolina. And I went there for a short time and then came back to California. And then he was transferred from there to Lockbourne Air Force Base in Ohio. And I moved to Ohio. And I stayed there until he was killed. And we weren't a low cross-country mission, and something went wrong with the plane. It started losing oil and stuff. It was too low to bail out, so we tried to land in a field because they were just skimming the treetops. And the plane crashed, and he was killed. And after that, I came back here and finished school and started teaching.
And what year was that?
It had to be 50 because I started teaching in 51. And somewhere between 49 and 50. I'm not very good at remembering dates.
That's fine. Okay. When did you go to work at Douglas?
Oh, gosh. I really couldn't tell you. All I know is it was after I finished high school. Mm-hmm. And that was in 41. So it was, I had finished high school and I was going to Santa Monica City College. So I know it was after 41 because I worked swing shift for a while and graveyard shift and went to school. And
how did you find out about jobs at Douglas, that there were jobs available?
I'm trying to remember if I saw an ad in the paper. I can't remember exactly, but I think I had seen something in the newspaper about this exam being given at USC for junior procurement officer, inspector rather. And the only requirement was high school graduation. So I sent in the application and they sent me a telegram. I was in Bakersfield at the time. They sent a telegram that the exam was being given. So I had to come back from Bakersfield and I went to SC and took the exam. And then when I went for the interview after the exam, I kept calling Rose Marie Beth Hope, and I answered yes. I called again and I said yes, and I stood up and I walked over to the counter and he looked at me and he said, you're Rose Marie Griffin? I said, yeah. And although the identification I had was my ID from the college, so I showed that. And so he took me back and started talking. He said, well, I think you should finish school. I said, well, I'm still going to school. I think you need to go back to school. That's when he told me that they wouldn't really work under me. Mm-hmm. Because being female, being Negro, and there were too many Southerners mm-hmm. there. And but I said, well, I'll give it the job I wanted to work anyway. And I had passed. And he said, yes. He said, as a matter of fact, you pass at the top of the list. But then when I went over to Douglas, he sent me on over to Douglas.
Now, where was this initial interview?
The initial interview was over near Beverly Boulevard and somewhere close to downtown. And I remember taking a bus and the streetcar and everything to get over there. And I can't remember the exact place.
Was it like a Douglas employment office or a general?
I think it was a general employment thing for different aircraft and, y'all, I'm sure. But the exam I took was for Douglas. And but then when I went on over to Douglas, so they decided, y'all, they would hire me, but I would be hired as a riveter.
What was your interview process like at Douglas?
I don't know, so long ago, I can't, but I really don't remember. But, they seemed very anxious, you know, to hire people. I guess they needed them, really. And I didn't have any problems. They said, yes, we can put you to work immediately, you know, but it would be riveting. I said, oh, I can learn that. I can do anything, you know. I didn't even know what they were talking about. And I had no idea what riveting. As a matter of fact, I didn't have any idea what the procurement inspector was either. I just took the exam. But, and then I started working, and they put me with this girl, Nene. And that's who I worked with, and she was really the one that actually taught me what to do.
You didn't have any kind of training before you started to work?
No. I know a sewing machine and a washing machine, but as far as all the other machines, I didn't know one machine. I knew a pair of pliers and a screwdriver. But as for the other things, I didn't know anything. And they really, you know, went through the process with Nene, because she had been working there for quite some time anyway. And they put me with her, and she was really a good teacher. And in no time at all, I knew all of the darn things and could work with her.
What was it like walking in there, knowing that you didn't have any familiarity with?
Well, actually, I didn't think about it. I don't know. Maybe I just didn't have sense enough to. I don't know. It really didn't bother me one little bit. And whenever I went on a job, actually, anything new, it really didn't bother me. I said, well, if I can't do it, there's always something else that I would be capable of doing. And the only way to find out is to just go ahead and try. And I even had nerve enough once to go take an exam for typist. And I didn't even know how to put the paper in the typewriter. And guess what? They hired me as a file clerk.
That's great.
So I guess he said, if she has nerve enough to come down to take a typing exam and doesn't even know how to put the paper in the typewriter, she must want a job.
That's great. How long after your interview did you begin to work?
It seems like to me almost the next day. I was right away. You know, there wasn't any delay, you know, in between, because I went that morning to this place over there near Beverly, and then I left there and went to Douglas, the plant there in Santa Monica. And I think I'm going to work the next evening. I'm not sure.
Did they give you any kinds of skills tests or aptitude tests or medical exams or anything like that?
We had to have a medical exam. They did give you a medical exam. But as far as, I can't remember any aptitude tests or anything like that. That was such a long time ago anyway.
What kinds of preparations did you have to make to begin work? I mean, did you have to buy special clothes or tools?
I didn't buy any tools because I was going to be riveting, and so their tools were there. But I know some of the people on certain parts, you know, in other areas, they did buy their own tools. And the only thing that they told me to be sure was to have my hair covered and wear pants. And pants weren't too popular with, females. Then they only wore them if they were going horseback riding or something. But I did have a couple of pairs of, I think they call them jeans. Well, they're like Levi material, but it was very stiff then. It wasn't soft and pliable like it is now. I had a couple of pairs of those and then a pair of gabardine slacks. And I decided I didn't want to wear those old funny hard jeans. And I wore my good gabardine slacks. And I wore those until I got my first change. And then I bought me two more pairs. My shoes were just regular old, they said no heels, you know, they didn't want you with those high heels on. I guess some of the secretaries and things, they did wear them, but in the other parts, you didn't wear those. And I wore saddle Oxfords. I used to love those anyway, and the dirtier the better, but I wore saddle Oxfords.
Did you have any kinds of expectations about what the job would be like, or what it would be like working in that kind of a job?
Not really. I really, the only thing I knew was that it was just going to be for a short time. I wasn't going to make a lifetime career of it. Just a short time just to get where I was going. And that was all the job was to me.
Pay-wise, how did it compare to other jobs that you had?
I only had one other job that was babysitting. Well, I did work for an elderly lady, and I went after school and went and, you know, helped her clean and sort of take care of her plants, and her whole house looked like a nursery, you know, and take care of one of her plants. She must have been pretty close to 9 or something, and she lived alone. And it was just, and most of the time we just sat and talked, really. I think she just really wanted company. And, I didn't get very much there, but the pay at Douglas working at night, it was $1 an hour. And even the men that were working at that time, I think at night, that's what their pay was. You know, beginning out there was $1 an hour, so you make them, I think, the same. The beginning workers. And then I remember the lead, I think it was the lead man. He was from Georgia or Alabama, and his first name was a girl's name, like Marion, or I don't know, can't even, I think it was Marion. And but he was very nice, and he also did a lot for help, and he was the one that suggested that I buck the ribbons rather than trying to shoot them, because he says you're having a time holding that rivet gun. And I don't know if my wrists were too weak or my hands too weak or something, but I just had to brace it against my stomach. And he said that wasn't good. And so he taught me into learning to buck the rivets. And when I started bucking the rivets, that was fine. I could do a good job of that. And he also showed me how to work the drill, because Nina couldn't do that. She would mess up every time she would try to drill a rivet out, so he showed me how to do that. When I got this, I could, you know, drill clinch rivets out there.
And so Nini chopped the rivets
and I could buck them. Mm-hmm. And I kept trying to remember Nini's real name. And all I could remember is Nini. I even asked my sister. But I remember that Nini stayed at Douglas. She must be somewhere 65 or older now. And my mother-in-law, well, my first husband's mother, worked at Douglas too. First she was at San Diego, and then when they moved up here, she worked at Douglas until she retired. And I don't know, she must be about 85 or 90 herself now.
What was your first impression when you walked into the plant on your first day?
Well, all I could remember looking back was walking into the big building looked like a blocks and blocks and blocks of a big barn. That's what it reminded me of. And then I got to see all of these jigs and different parts. And it was really fascinating after I started, you know, going through. It did take me for a tour. I forgot about that, to show me, you know, through the parts of the plant. And I had no idea that the airplane would be in so many different sections and so many different places. I think you just started, you just built the whole thing right in one spot there, you know, and when you got through, you just pulled it out and got another. But the, you know, different parts were made in different parts of the plane. And, but afterward, after the initial shock of walking into this block long burn, half the time I enjoyed it, and half the time I didn't. But when I got to the room, I said, well, just a little while longer, and you'll have enough money to go on and finish, you know, to get yourself through, and that'll be the end of all of this hard work.
Can you describe what the plant looked like as far as lighting and ventilation and that kind of thing?
I don't really remember too much about the ventilation, but I know the light where I worked was very good. It was just like daylight inside us, you know, working there at night. I had no complaints about the lighting. And when anyone got, you know, hurt, even just the slightest little scratch, they sent you to the infirmary. And
now, when you went in your first day, did you go in with a group, a whole new group, or did you go in by yourself to a department?
You know, I'm trying to remember if there was anyone else that was in there at the time that I went. I'm trying to really, you know, think back. But I really don't remember going, you know, with a group. I'm almost certain that I went in by myself.
Were there many other women that were working at the time that you went in?
There were quite a few, but I still think there were more men than women. Mm-hmm. But they were, you know, older men. There weren't a lot of real young men. There were some, but not a lot of them. And the longer I worked, more women seemed to come in. Because I remember one Mexican girl that became a very good friend, she came all the way from East L.A. to Santa Monica and riding the bus in a streetcar and working at night, too. That was a long way for her to come. And she was about the same age I was. She might have been a little younger, I don't know. But she looked about the same age.
What was the reaction of the men who were working there? Rose, I was asking you what the reaction to the men who were already working in the plant were to you when you came in, or to women in general as they came in to work.
Well, I think they were really glad to see them, because that meant that they were getting more people in there to work. Since they weren't getting, you know, too many men, someone had to do it. And really, the women worked, I think they did a better job and worked harder than the men did.
So you think the men appreciated that?
I think so. I think they appreciated it more then than men do now when women come in to where, you know, it's predominantly male. They sort of resent them now, but they didn't seem to resent them then. Maybe it was just because it was wartime or something.
How did you feel your first day, after your first day of work, when you got home and thought about it?
When I went, left work, I went to school, and then I came home. And, well, my mother wanted to know, you know, what I did and everything. I said, oh, fine, nothing. That was the way I did nothing. And later on, she began to tell, because I was tired when I would come home. She said, well, I know you're not you're through doing nothing. You're working now. And I did. I was getting awfully tired. And I was always somewhat anemic. And then I had the bad tonsils on top of that. They'd been bad, I think, most of my life. And finally, because I had that sore throat, and I'd get sick off and on, and then it'd clear up, and I know the doctor would say, no, you don't have to be worried. But I worked at Douglas for a while, and I began to lose quite a bit of weight, and I had really had to have those tonsils taken out. I didn't have enough weight to lose then anyway. I had to lose it now. But really, as a whole, I enjoyed it. And I'm trying to think of the head of that department. He had a French name, but I can't remember. And he was extremely nice. And everybody, you know, in the department, they all liked him. And if something was going wrong, they'd call him, and he'd just come, you know, immediately, you know, see what he could do, you know, to help, to get, you know, things straightened out. And I knew one time they said we couldn't put a big rivet in. And so then he just whistled. He ran over, and he okayed it, right? Just like that. He just looked at him, okayed, said, for sure. That's it. No, you know, hassle about the thing. And really, thinking back, I think it was kind of halfway pleasant. It was hard, but, and the immediate group around me, they were all very nice, everything.
What was that group like? I mean, who made up that group? How many women were there? And
there were four women. It was Nene, the Mexican girl, I can't think of her name. There was a redhead that had come here from the South, believe it or not, and me. And then, let's see, there was this the lead man, and he was also from the South. And there were a couple of other fellows there. But you know, I can't remember only two other colors in the department, you know, in the section where I was working.
I was going to ask you if there were very many.
But I can only remember two at the time, you know, out of here. And, because I wasn't too friendly with too many people anyway. And, as a matter of fact, they used to call me snobbish. Maybe I was a snob, I don't know. But really, those four, you know, the four of us, we met outside before we came, you know, went in. And we always had our lunch together. We'd take off together. And if the bus was there, I would ride the bus with, what's that redhead's name? Because she had to come to Los Angeles, and the Mexican girl went to East L.A. And Nene was in Santa Monica. And so if the bus was there, I would ride the bus to Sepulveda, and I'd get off, and the other two would keep on. And if it wasn't there, I'd just walk on home. They'd stop at the bus stop, and I'd just walk home. Because I could get home almost by the time the next bus came along. But there's, any of the other little, you know, social things, like some of them, there were little clubs across the street, and there was a clothing place where you know, they set up and you could go and buy your slacks and shoes and things like that. I never went in there. I never went into the little club where they'd go afterwards, you know, and drink or have a sandwich or something. The four of us always bought our lunch. We didn't have to, sort of just stuck together.
Did you spend time outside of work hours,
just
like on weekends?
Just once. We all went to Malibu Beach together. Two from L.A. came down, and we went to Malibu. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to remember who had the car. I think the girl, the Mexican girl, borrowed her brother's car. And anyway, that's when we went to Malibu Beach, and that was the only time, you know, other than at work.
How did you feel about your growing competency around the machinery and around tools? Did that affect you at all?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
someplace. Well, I think I would have taken much more interest in it if I had planned to do that type of work or anything similar, you know, for the rest, figuring for the rest of my life, you know, the way I would make my living. But I didn't. And I, you know, learned as much about him as I possibly could, but I wasn't, you know, gung-ho about doing it, you know. Just. And it's always been pretty easy for me to pick up, you know, working with my hands and working, you know, with machines. Mm-hmm. But I don't like to do it. Because I did, I learned to work a sanding machine. And I'm trying to think, some other kind of machine. And my mother did silver and cadmium and nickel plating during the war.
And where was that?
At Frank Reber. That was in West Los Angeles, just before you get to Santa Monica, almost the dividing line. And she had a couple of experiences. And there she was in the plating department, and they hired this other girl. And when she came in, they told her, well, go back there to the back in the plating department and see Anna May, and she will tell you, you know, what to do. And the girl came, went back there. I know who Anna May was, my mother. I am. And she stormed out of there and went up to the front and told them that no way in the world. Anna May was colored, and she wasn't taking any orders from any colored person. So the girl told her, well, there's the door, bye. But my mother did most of the plating there. But that was one thing I decided I did not like to do. Because all the fumes, and I think you give them an acid bath, you do all, too much. I did not like that. It was fun working at Douglas while I worked there.
Were there ever incidences like the one you just described with your mother?
Mm-mm.
That you knew of?
Or? No. And, of course, it could be because we just didn't, you know, go all over the place. We just had the four of us to stay together. And they used to say, well, you could be the Gold Dust Twins, except there are four of you. And, I don't know. We just seemed to sort of gravitate toward each other when we started working there. Because Nini was already there, and I came, then the Mexican girl came in, and then the Caucasian. And I can't remember her name, but she had the most beautiful red hair. And big waves, it was, I guess, what you would call auburn, maybe? It wasn't, you know, real loud wind. It was natural color, but it was beautiful. Yeah. That's
it. While you were working, did you get raises or promotions or that kind of thing?
Well, I don't know if you call it a promotion or not, but I was moved from bucking rivets to installing, I think they call them bomb sight reflectors. Rages. Took a screwdriver and put four screws in the thing, you know, in the cockpit. And I don't know, I may have had a raise, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. Whether I had a raise or not. But I know that was an easier job. It was boring, much more boring. Because after you, let's see, 6.5 hours is putting four screws in there, it was much more fun working with the rivets. Mm-hmm. It's noisy over there too, but you could hear that noise. So blocks, because we could hear the rivet guns at all the way at my house. And we lived right off Pico and Sepulveda, and you know where Douglas Santa Monica is, you could hear it.